Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about efforts to improve mental wellness in the state. January is, in fact, Mental Wellness Awareness Month. We'll check in with the Executive Director of Mental Health Colorado on some practices that we could all incorporate and some efforts that they are leading at a state level. After that, we'll continue with our series, The Brink. It's a collaboration between KGNU, the Just Transition Collaborative, and students in the Environmental Studies program at CU Boulder, taking a look at issues that are focused on social, environmental and economic justice. And today we'll hear about wildfires in California and how often seniors are left more vulnerable due to how emergency alerts are issued. We'll hear from you, the listener, on the comment line before the bottom of the hour. Then after headlines, it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, well, almost daily we hear of amazing advances in neuroscience and new capabilities of artificial intelligence. Breakthroughs come at a dizzying pace, and yet a scientific understanding of consciousness remains elusive. Well, today on our science show, How on Earth, we hear from philosopher Philip Goff on the foundations for a new science of consciousness. Alan Watts fans might want to tune in a little early to get their mind in a state of readiness by listening to Philip Goff speak with Chip Granditz about modern philosophical and scientific theories of one of mankind's most enduring mysteries, the fundamental nature of consciousness. That will, of course, be followed by Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Alejandra Wilcox.
The Boulder County District Attorney's Office said Monday that it would be unable to provide a beyond a reasonable doubt that two Longmont City Council members violated any criminal laws. This follows a two-month-long investigation of the communications between the council members and the president of a local nonprofit services agency. Julia Rush, president of the Outreach United Resource Center Board, or R Center, reached out to the district attorney. Rush was concerned that Councilwomen Polly Christensen and Joan Peck were threatening the R Center with a shutoff of future funding if the center applied for 2020 funding from the local homeless outreach foundation, HOPE. Rush had raised concerns that Peck and Christensen had possible conflicts of interest and that Christensen had used personal emails to conduct business. She was also concerned about both city council members' transparency. Rush initially made her complaints in a November email to Mayor Brian Bagley and the Boulder County Purchasing Office, along with the DA. Rush told the Times Call that she was not surprised by the DA's conclusion, but says she is happy the DA conducted an investigation. She added that she hopes City Council takes her concerns just as seriously. The statement from the DA said that while they determined that Rush's concerns did not meet standards for pursuing criminal charges, quote, "this does not rule out administrative or civil actions to address those issues." In an email to the Times Call, Peck and Christensen said they hope that City Council can now move forward. Peck said she hopes that this council can move forward and concentrate on the business of the city. Mayor Brian Bagley said Monday that he hopes now that the DA has concluded its inquiry, the council can now begin talking about what occurred and how they can avoid it in the future. A future meeting to discuss whether the two councilwomen's October contacts with the R Center board president violated legal or ethical standards for elected officials is planned but has not yet been scheduled. Boulder-born natural grocery chain Lucky's Market filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection on Monday. Last week, Lucky's acknowledged the imminent closing of at least 32 of the company's 39 nationwide locations. They cited underperforming stores in regions oversaturated with competition. The company also shelved plans to open 14 new stores in Florida in 2020. Lucky's said it has signed an agreement to sell 6 Florida store locations to the German grocer Aldi. The company also announced plans to sell 5 other locations to Publix Supermarkets Incorporated. Additionally, Lucky's is now exploring the sale of the 7 stores that it said will remain open. Those stores include locations in North Boulder and Fort Collins. According to court documents, these stores will be subject to bidding procedures. It is unclear whether the potential buyer of these stores is Aldi or another grocery retailer. News of these closures came about a month after Kroger, the parent company of King Soopers in Colorado, announced that it would divest its ownership stake in Lucky's. Kroger said its partnership with Lucky's had failed to live up to Kroger's financial expectations. Last week, Lucky's filed a closure and layoffs notice for its North Boulder grocery store location and its adjacent cafe and bakehouse. Those facilities employ a total of 98 workers. Despite that filing, a Lucky's official told the Daily Camera that the Fort Collins and North Boulder locations will remain open. More than 200 employees at Lucky's Niwot headquarters will lose their jobs, as the facility intends to close permanently. Operations are expected to cease entirely by April 7, 2020. This November, Colorado voters will have the chance to decide whether to let gray wolves be reintroduced in western Colorado. However, before they have the chance to weigh in, state lawmakers may take up their own vote on the issue. The Denver Post reports that neither supporters nor opponents of the ballot measure are happy with this new Senate proposal. Senator Carrie Donovan, a Democrat out of Vail, introduced legislation late Friday because she said the situation had changed since the wolf reintroduction ballot initiative was first proposed. Since that time, wildlife officials have found evidence of wolves living in northwest Colorado and in Moffat County. Donovan believes that the bill will spur more discussion and lead different interest groups to find more common ground, more so than the ballot measure would be able to do. One of her main concerns revolves around compensating commercial livestock owners for damages caused by gray wolves. Advocates believe that compensation is important, but Donovan says it's hard to create detailed policy around it on a yes or no ballot question. She also said she doesn't think wool growers, cattlemen, and some other agriculture groups have really had a chance to voice their concerns about reintroduction. Donovan's bill calls for reintroduction based on a plan from the Parks and Wildlife Commission to begin by December 31st, 2025, 2 years later than outlined in the ballot question. This could be delayed if the state has not yet identified a source of revenue to pay for damages caused by wolves. The reintroduction could also be canceled if the wolf population in Colorado is self-sustaining by that time. Supporters of the ballot initiative say that they don't support the bill as it stands, but the Rocky Mountain Wolf Action Fund president said advocates are willing to work with lawmakers to come up with a better solution. Opponents of the issue say that postponing reintroduction for 2 years, as well as talking about a sustainable population of wolves without identifying that threshold, make it seem like the bill is a way for lawmakers to get the wolves reintroduced even if the ballot measure fails. In weather today, sunshine and highs of 49 degrees are expected after yesterday's chill and cloud cover. It's currently about 30 degrees on the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Alejandra Wilcox.
It is 14 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, January is Mental Wellness Month, and many experts are using it as an opportunity to broaden the conversations that we have about mental health. They're wanting to foster discussions about cultivating mental wellness as part of everyday life for everybody. I spoke with Vincent Ashity, who is the CEO and President of Mental Health Colorado.
At Mental Health Colorado, we've been increasingly focusing our communications and education efforts on healthier minds across the lifespan. And just as we've come a long way, as you've mentioned, with physical health, in understanding that many of the chronic diseases that can plague somebody throughout a life get their start in a whole series of behaviors and supports that can be put in place early on. You know, we've all gotten very comfortable with recognizing that we should be eating more fruits and vegetables and being less sedentary and seeing our physician for an annual wellness exam and getting our vaccinations and putting all those things in place for physical health. Well, similarly, mental health and mental wellness can be greatly supported by a number of interventions and practices across a whole lifespan. So one of the key things we're interested in recognizing, especially as an advocacy and policy organization, you know, Mental Health Colorado has long been very much focused on health care access questions and the very important needs of people who do live with serious mental illness and need appropriate levels of access to quality care. But people with living with serious mental illness are a very small fraction of our population, but everybody has mental health concerns. And what our mental health concerns, we need to be thinking about that with our children. And so we've articulated a framework that describes all of the places across a lifespan where we can be doing better for supporting mental health outcomes, starting with the strong start for all children.
When we talk then about mental wellness, and particularly when it comes to children, what do some of those changes look like? And particularly in the context of severely funded public education as it is, and an education system that's already stressed, you know, how can we make it more suitable so that we have mental wellness in our schools, but then also in our families and in every other aspect of our lives, as we said, particularly when it comes to children?
So, you know, one of the key things for us to recognize is really kind of intuitive, and it's understanding that children's behaviors are very much a product of their mental health. And a child who is being disruptive, for example, in a classroom setting at the age of 10 or something like that, is rarely a child who has got some kind of a, you know, antisocial notion about being disruptive. Much more often, a child's behavior is the product of their own processing of traumatic experiences and other kinds of factors in their own environment that contribute to mental health concerns. And so one of the key things we can do as a community is making sure that our educators, who are our, you know, our front line of providers of support and care for children, that they are well informed about recognizing people's mental health needs and being able to refer them to appropriate, provide or refer them to appropriate supports for their mental health needs. So to that end, one of the pieces of policy that Mental Health Colorado is supporting in this particular legislative session is around is ensuring that teachers' continuing education for the renewal of their licensure includes components that are about mental health needs assessment and recognition in children.
Well, aside from children then, you talked about Mental Health Colorado and your toolkit to really look at the whole lifespan of this. I mean, at the other end of the spectrum, we've got folks who are aging, and I know mental health and mental wellness is a concern there too. So give us a sense of what Mental Health Colorado is doing for the other end of the life spectrum, as it were, for the seniors in society.
Well, that really is sort of the main aspect of our advocacy about healthier minds across the lifespan at Mental Health Colorado, is recognizing that, you know, we are all going to face the deterioration of our physical processes over the course of our mortal lifespan, which is to be expected. But we can also be aspiring to mental wellness, and you know, that comes with it all kinds of things like avoiding some of the issues that can very, very much plague and make aging more challenging and unfortunate than it needs to be, and experiences of isolation and separation from community. And, you know, one of the gravest unexpected and unfortunate outcomes of our current system of lack of attention to wellness and aging is associated with the intersection with the criminal justice system. You know, I've heard from jail commanders that one of the most quickly growing demographics in county jails is seniors who are living with dementia, Alzheimer's disease, and are in jail facing criminal charges and yet unable to really know their own names or what they're doing there, because we do not have a system of care and long-term residential care that can accommodate folks with dementia adequately enough. So to think that we're becoming a community that has to think of aging as aging into jail is something that none of us should be comfortable embracing, and we need to be taking quick strides as decisively as possible toward making sure that as people confront some of the worst case scenarios in aging, that the community is stepping up to make those circumstances much better.
Vincent Achity is the CEO and President of Mental Health Colorado, and January is Mental Wellness Month. Now, they have a lot of resources at their website, a lot of information and things that we can all use in terms of fostering mental wellness throughout the day. And it's mentalhealthcolorado.org, mentalhealthcolorado.org.
The 2020 census count happens in Colorado in April, and civic leaders are mobilizing to ensure that all Colorado's communities are counted. Local nonprofits want to make sure everyone is counted in the census.
We all need to be counted and represented in Congress, even those who are not able to vote are still represented in Congress if you're counted.
Tune in this Thursday morning at 8:30 for the Next Trends podcast, a collaboration between KGNU and the Community Foundation of Boulder County, to hear about efforts to have everyone in the state counted. That's an in-depth report this Thursday morning at 8:30, followed by a panel discussion at 9 right here on KGNU.
And we do hope you'll tune in for that coming up on Thursday. We'll continue our coverage of Census 2020 tomorrow morning on The Morning Magazine. We'll hear how the NAACP in Boulder County is encouraging folks to get out and be counted as part of the census, because historically people of colour have been undercounted in the census. So we'll hear about that tomorrow. We'll hear a lot more on Thursday morning. And don't forget, you can subscribe to a podcast of The Trends. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Look for KGNU, and so you can listen to all of the past episodes, taking a deep dive into issues impacting different communities here in Boulder County. Well, The Brink is a partnership between KGNU Community Radio, the Just Transition Collaborative at CU Boulder, and students in the Environmental Studies program there. And we have been exploring and listening to stories focusing on social, environmental and economic justice. This morning, we're going to hear about the impact of wildfires on a group that are particularly vulnerable, it seems, in natural disasters. And this is seniors. And this story comes from Grace Martinez and Sarah Colbert, taking a look at the impact on seniors of the wildfires that devastated Northern California in 2018.
On November 8, 2018, Northern California was hit with the deadliest fire in the United States since 1918. Ignited by a faulty PG&E electric transmission line, these fires would provide insight into the interaction between a changing climate and society.
One area especially vulnerable to not only the fires, but also the lasting effects they had, was Paradise, California. Located only 3 hours north of San Francisco, the small rural community saw an extreme drop in the amount of rain received that year. This period of drought would prove to be disastrous for the citizens and their loved ones. During our research, one story stood out. Liz Kappen has lived in the Paradise area for many years, creating a home there. The year since the campfire, she has had to rebuild and repair the community she loves so much.
So all of a sudden, we realized there was a fire and tried to figure out where the fire was. My daughter kept calling, telling me to get out. We said, okay, we're leaving. We packed up, you know, some bags. And at about that time, we got the robocall from the city telling us all the zones that needed to be out.
Liz and her neighbors fought to protect their town, and thankfully, despite a faulty emergency alert system, Liz and her husband were able to safely flee the Paradise area to stay with her daughter. Through Liz's story, it became apparent that older generations dealt with difficulties and delays during the evacuation process.
Many of the people in our town complain that they never got a call, and I think they're working on a system for cell and landline. But, you know, it's an older community. Most of us still had landlines. And a lot of the equipment had burned, so the landline wouldn't work.
Bill Travis, a geography professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, studies the human dimensions of natural hazards and climate change. He says there are significant consequences when warning systems are ineffective.
Yeah, well, one of them is that then they are trapped by the problem, right? They're trapped by the disaster. And you are looking at Paradise, and what I've read suggests that there were a few elderly couples, a couple for in particular, that just weren't able to take the action needed, which was to physically move, and they died in their home. Now, this also happened in a fire in Southern Colorado 10 years ago, in which the question there was, were they unable to take the action, or were they not? Did they not get the message because they don't have cell phones?
This question brings up two major components impacting warning system efficacy: dissemination and ability to elicit an appropriate response.
Warning system studies now remind us all that you got to get the message out, and it has to have the desired effect. It would be hard for a person to miss a warning who has some connection to their community, some IT, and some notion of risk. It looks like we've gotten to the point where we're really getting dissemination, and our systems are now where there are problems and barriers is in that response. So maybe if 30% of people don't evacuate in front of a fire or a hurricane, it wasn't because they didn't get the message, it's because of a whole set of human factors.
And one of those factors must undoubtedly be age. According to the AARP, the Paradise campfire had a greater effect on the older generations. The difference in response capability between the older and younger generations is pervasive throughout the entirety of a natural disaster, from evacuation to rebuilding, says Emily Rogan, the Chief Operating Officer of United Policyholders, an organization that helps natural disaster survivors with insurance claims.
We find that seniors have a very hard time too, not only because of, you know, what I said about being displaced from their community, and you know, it can be very disorienting. Oftentimes, if you had a health issue before, your health issues will get worse.
Liz, the Paradise resident we interviewed, also spoke about this issue.
It's been a challenge for some older people like us just to get it all back up and running again. But we were lucky because we had a house. There are people just traumatized, can't come back. There are people who, like my husband's uncle, he's 95, you know? He doesn't have the time or the energy to rebuild.
After the strides towards rebuilding, many feared the 2018 fires were just the beginning. In hindsight, we can now see that our story could not have come at a more fitting time. Over a month ago, when we let Emily know our projected run date, this was her worrisome response.
All right, well, we might have a wildfire in between now and then, so.
At the rate our climate is changing, research shows we're bound to experience an increase in the frequency and magnitude of natural disasters. As magnitude increases, it will require improved alert systems, evacuation processes, and aid to those who must rebuild, or else the disparity in different groups' vulnerabilities will continue to widen.
And that story was produced by students Grace Martinez and Sarah Colbert as part of The Brink. It's time now for the comment line.
Hi, I'm a KGNU listener member, and I turned on the radio this afternoon. It's the 24th of January, and the Laura Flanders show was on, who I don't usually listen to, but she was interviewing a poet and writer who I'm not familiar with, but in any event, I found the interview kind of off-putting in the tone of it, that they both were just very much in performance mode, and it didn't really seem like a very genuine conversation on either one of their parts, so I found it kind of off-putting for that reason. But then the poet started to read a poem that she had written about what she might be like when she's older, and it was so body phobic and so ageist in a really disturbing way that I started not being happy at all at what I was listening to, and surprised that I found it on KGNU. So I don't know if other listeners felt the same way. I'd be curious if they did, because it made me feel like, start to wonder whether, why KGNU carries the Laura Flanders show. Again, I haven't listened to her before, so maybe this was an aberration, but wow, it was not fun to listen to. Thank you.
And that is the comment line. 303-447-9911 is the number to call.